Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting radiolemans.com. This is IMSA Radio.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to another IMSA Radio and Radio Show Limited special programme as we look back on the 2020 season. I'm John Hindhoff, once again joined by Shea Adam and Jeremy Shaw, and we're going to take a look at the IMSA Michelin Pilot Challenge for 2020. We used to call this, Jeremy, one of the best kept secrets in American racing. I don't think we can say that anymore because it has really taken off in the last 3 or 4 years, possibly even a little bit more than that. And certainly since the adoption of GT4 and TCR as the two major categories a couple of seasons ago, it has been absolutely stunning.
Yeah, hello everybody. Great to be back. And that unfortunately we lost that opportunity to call it the best kept secret 2 or 3 years ago, didn't we? So it's now one of the elite championships, really, in the world in terms of this sort of category of racing, GT4, TCR all together, and I think it's absolutely sensational.
TCR's been up a little bit up and down since it was first introduced. You could probably say the same about GT4 as well, but we're beginning to get a little bit of consistency now with the entry. Sadly, we've lost some of the manufacturers. We didn't see the VWs this year, and with VW no longer really supporting that, although they're still looking after current competitors. There's no works involvement. We don't get, of course, quite a few of the TCR manufacturers that we see in the rest of the world, like Cupra, which is another VAG Seat brand, Renault, and one or two others. But in Hyundai, Audi, Honda, and Alfa Romeo, we've had a decent spread of cars in TCR.
Very much so. And the important thing to remember is that this year in particular, we got a bit of a spoil and riches as far as our four different manufacturers were concerned, because all four manufacturers ran in every round of the championship this year. Whereas in years past, we've had VW dropping in and dropping out. We've had Alpha here and there. This year, we had that consistency, even though the results were heavily slated towards two of the four manufacturers.
And if we talk about that, first of all, that's a fair point that you make there, Shea. The four manufacturers ultimately were separated by, just over a race win from fourth to first position. 290 for Alfa Romeo, Honda 302 in third, Audi 319 in second, and Hyundai 339 at the top of the manufacturers. That's really important for the manufacturers, Jeremy, and Hyundai threw a lot of resources at it. It was a new car in the Veloster, and Brian Hurt at Autosport, who developed that car on the previous platform, as well as running the cars with some customer cars as well. They did a very good job this year.
Well, yes, absolutely did. That was effectively a full factory program. Mm. Let's not deny that, because they put an awful lot of resources into it. As you say, a new car for the season as well, and running a phalanx of cars out there. Alpha, it was just a singleton entry this year, unfortunately, for that private team, KMR Engineering. That was always going to be a struggle for them. The car was competitive from time to time, but they didn't have an awful lot of luck. And as I say, just the one car to go ahead against those other manufacturers. Honda lost some momentum this year. They felt that the balance of performance really wasn't in their favour, and that's a long story as to really why that was the case. And I think credit here once again to IMSA for stepping in here and kind of taking over some of the responsibility for that BOP, because previously it had been just all down to the European-based TCR organization that pulled all the strings in terms of that. So I think the balance was a lot better towards the end of the year.
That's a very good assessment that Jeremy makes there. And that little alpha, a fan favourite, I have to say one of my favourites, probably because I've had one of those cars and I drove one as a long-term test for getting on for 6 months. It looks different here. It's, with the shield grille on the front, it's absolutely an Alfa Romeo. And the colour scheme this year and that volcano or Vesuvius red with the red underpinnings there and the Alfa badge on it, it really stood out. And in fact, when that car lasted, and it did have some reliability problems, it was very competitive indeed.
It finished fourth twice on the season at Road America and then for the final race of the season at Sebring International Raceway. But it did tend to run well. It would stealth its way up, and then either you or Jeremy would mention it, and then there would be a puff of white smoke out the back of it, as the commentator's curse always struck this little car. But yes, it's kind of amazing to think that we've had this car running in the series now for 2+ years. The best result has only been fourth place. It has yet to make it onto the podium. You feel like it's almost due that result, but the competition has been so difficult and it's only going to get more so in the future that they just haven't been able to put all the pieces into place as KMR Engineering.
There are
I think that's a fair comment to me. I mean, that reliability has been a problem, John. You're absolutely right. But and as she says, the car has had the pace. I mean, they started off the season with a pole at Daytona. They finished off the season with the fastest race lap at Sebring. So, the car is certainly quick. And I think, if they'd had more cars out there, it could have been a real contender because there's so much to be learned. And as you both say, as competitive as TCR is, those strengths in numbers really does become important.
Yeah, they have a really good following as well, as do all the manufacturers here. Honda finished up in third position with the Civic. Again, a real fan favourite, has a massive following share in terms of the tuner community. And if we think of TCR as the natural successor to Street Tuner, probably the Honda Civic has one of, if not the biggest followings in that category.
It definitely does. And in years past, we've had the minis running before we switched over to the TCR format. The mini community was sort of the most ravenous out there. Well, the Honda community has stepped up and filled the void. But again, it was one of those years. And Jeremy alluded to the fact that BOP, the three dirtiest letters in motorsport, in some people's opinion, it did play a role. But also, they didn't have the stable entries that they typically do. They didn't have a solid driving core of two reliable, experienced drivers who are capable of going out and winning because they've done it before, race after race. And that really affected the Honda front that was brought this year. But again, strong effort from them at many of the races, including the Road Atlanta rounds, where we saw Atlanta Speedworks coming back and helping out. We've had the LA Honda World Organization with as few as one, as many as three cars. So it was a very, it was almost a random year from Honda. You never know what you were going to expect when they turned up to the track each weekend.
But it wasn't Honda that was pulling the shots there. That's the point here.
That is a very good point. Yes.
And the reason they didn't have LAP didn't have the stability was because some of the drivers, i.e. the guys who pay the bills, didn't think their car was competitive.
Yeah.
Ironically, when the changes to the balance of performance were made, which I think was right before the doubleheader at Mid-Ohio, all of a sudden it put things right back in Honda's court. But unfortunately, the two paying drivers, which are Mike Lamara and Chris Miller, they decided the cars weren't competitive, so they didn't get a chance to show how fast the car should have been on that occasion. Mike came back for one more race after that, but didn't do the final two races. But Matt Pomba was generally quick.
He was.
Ryan Eversley was generally quick, the results don't show at the end of the year how competitive the Honda probably was in terms of the other manufacturers.
Were you surprised, Jeremy, at the relative, and this is not a massive criticism, by the way, I'll say that. Were you surprised at the relative lack of ambition, support, interest that was shown by HPD? I know that's not their car. They've developed a lower version of touring car on the 1.5 SI Civic rather than the TCR spec car, which is a JAS, JAS Motorsport Italian team and developer who have developed the Honda products, including the NSX, actually. Well, going back to 1998, maybe. Honda didn't seem present, if you see what I mean, with HPD.
No, that's true, and nor was Alfa Romeo as a factory, and nor really was Audi. I mean, they had a few privateer cars out there, but the point of that is that TCR isn't supposed to be a manufacturer category. It's really just Honda, Hyundai that completely changed the dynamic in that category. You know, they put a lot of effort behind it. They made sure they had top drivers in all the cars. They ran with Brian Hoda Autosport, which is a very accomplished beautifully managed team. So, you know, they just had the best of everything. So it's no surprise they ended up at the top of the pack. Did they have always the best car for a portion of the season? Most unquestionably, yes. Mm. Towards the end of the season, no. I think it was pretty even. And that was certainly good to see. Those final couple of races, the final three races, it was an Audi that set the fastest race lap in two of them, and the Alfa in the last one. And you know, the Hondas were competitive as well, even though they might not have had the ultimate best drivers out for those final couple of races in the Hondas. So, you know, the end of the year, I thought, looked super strong. And you know, if I was going into next year, looking at the manufacturers, yeah, I think if you've got a properly run team, you could be competitive with any of them. I think that's again a testimony to the IMSA technical team. But at the same time, of course, you have to say that Hyundai is absolutely totally committed to TCR at the moment, and it is hard from some perspectives to look against that.
Yeah, there's 13, 14 different manufacturers who are TCR, who have TCR cars. Not all of them. Yes. What we should say is not all of them would be eligible to be running in Michelin, yeah, because of the fact that they don't sell cars in America. So Cupra, by the way, Seat, as was, that's their performance brand, they wouldn't be allowed. Volkswagen would, which is essentially, it's the same sort of, they're built by the same people. Seat Motorsport build all of the VAG TCRs, so the Audis, the VWs, and the Cupras. You've got Subaru, which would be, Renault, which wouldn't, Peugeot, no, MG, no, Lada, don't think so, Kia, which is the Kia Ceed, which uses the same G4KD engine, isn't it, that the Hyundai uses. That you could use.
Well, again, but you're relying then on the manufacturers to get involved with IMSA, aren't you? And
yes.
And that's a major commitment that many of those companies you just talked about just aren't willing to make, particularly, I think, in the current climate.
And some of them, of course, are relatively small players in the US market. There is a Ford Focus TCR, which that was developed. There was one on an ST that was developed a few years ago, and another one on a standard Focus. We've never really seen that. The Mazda hasn't. Mazda 3 TCR hasn't appeared.
Isn't.
And now won't. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right.
Shame that.
Yeah, I agree, because that was looking very good indeed. The Skyactiv-Car.
I think that was a strange decision because Mazda has a tremendous grassroots motorsports organization.
Agreed.
In North America. Absolutely tremendous. And that, I believe, would have been could have been a big thing for them. So I was really surprised to hear that program wasn't going to go forward.
The one that I always thought we might see in IMSA was the Mercedes-Benz, either the A45 AMG or the A250, both effectively the same car. But the one I think we might see, particularly in coming years, there's allegedly going to be a Toyota Corolla TCR, a Gazoo Racing design car. That's yet to appear. Now, I know we've already got Lexus, and Lexus have pulled their horns in and won't be supporting the GT3 cars in Japan and in Europe, although the US program isn't affected. And there's one or two other manufacturers out there. I want to go back before we start talking about drivers and teams, though, guys. Just to Hyundai, it was the Veloster this year, and that was a marketing decision. It's the same engine as the i30N TCR, which Brian Hurt at Autosport has been running for a couple or 3 years. It effectively uses the same platform. The suspension pickups and things are, if not identical, very similar. But a little, actually, it is a four-door car. It has two doors on one side, one on the other, and a hatchback, which is how it gets in through the regulations. But all of that said, Shea, that still was a change. It was still a car that had to be developed before the season started. And quite frankly, Brian Hurt at Autosport took that on and did a very good job indeed. And we learn now, at the end of the 2020 season, they're going to be doing it again with the i30 sedan, as it's called, or saloon in some places, or the fastback, or the Elantra. They're going to be doing it again for next year. But you'd have to say that what they showed this year, you wouldn't bet against them, even with the new body style.
No, definitely not. It's interesting that last year they won the championship with Mark Wilkins and Michael Lewis. They took two new cars for this year, still the Veloster, still the body shape, but new chassis. And the old chassis they sold and repurposed. Those two chassis were uber competitive this year. One of them, in fact, actually going on and being a real championship contender. The two new chassis that they used this year are going to be in use next year, as they're continuing this Christmas tree effect. But you wouldn't count out the 2019 championship chassis for next year, because Brian Hurt has done such a good job developing the car and pulling out its strengths that car is still competitive 2 years after it won the championship. Of course, with the Elantra, there will be some learning curves. They'll need to do a lot of testing to try and develop the car so that when they roll into Daytona, they're on a good foot to start. But this is a team that's now won the championship 2 years in a row. And you feel like this is a factory-backed effort. This is a serious, hey, we're here to play from Hyundai. Massive. Versus some of these guys who are still building cars out of their garages and showing up with trailers that have ladders tethered to the roofs.
I think the other thing, Jeremy, is that Hyundai with the N brand, that is their performance brand. And since it's Albert Biermann, isn't it, went over from BMW, that was part of the strategy for Hyundai worldwide to get cars that drove well, not unlike Mazda. You know, every car drives like a Mazda. They're trying to make the Hyundai brand a little bit more exciting, and this N suffix that they have is their brand. And they've thrown a lot of resources, including financial resources, behind it.
Yeah, I mean, Shea talks about developing the chassis. You're not allowed to develop these cars. They're all homologated. That's what you've got. You run with it. You know, it's not like it's the Veloster this year. Yes, it did have a different bodywork, but otherwise, all the underpinnings, all the mechanicals, everything else is the same as before. So, you know, for Veloster from last year, Veloster for this year, absolutely identical. They're just a new car. You're sure, but that cars are so well built these days that they don't deteriorate after 1 year in terms of their competitiveness. I am a little bit surprised about about bringing in the Elantra, purely from a perception standpoint. With the quote-unquote factory team, Brian Hurt Autosport, running the Elantras next year, and the customer team, quote-unquote, running the Velostas. Well, the factory is unlikely to build a new, if it's a new car, in this case, I think probably just new bodywork. But I'm not sure that perception sends is really quite good for that team, because I was going to say that the factory is not going to be running an inferior car to the car they had last year. So therefore, by inference, the Velostas aren't going to be as quick as the Elantras. So that's a bit of an odd one.
I think I would. I would be.
And plus, I thought, you know, that's not the way TCR is supposed to be done. You're not supposed to be bringing out new cars each year.
Well,
from my perspective,
there has been some controversy about the way Hyundai and their motorsport division has gone about this, and it did cause some pretty bad blood actually in. Back end of the season, about the middle of the season actually, but it was September, so getting on towards the back end of the year. And I was at the WTCR round at the Nürburgring, which was alongside the Nürburgring 24 Hours, and there were some teams that withdrew from that. All started because of the controversy about how Hyundai have gone about this, and particularly the amount of development that's gone into the engine, that Theta engine that all of those cars are use. And it is an interesting conversation to have. But I think, as you alluded to, Jeremy, in fact, no, not even as you alluded to, as you stated earlier on, IMSA has sort of stayed out of that because they have been brave enough, sensible enough, whichever way you look at it, to gather their own data and to have their technical department apply their own BOP. And they run on Michelin tyres, of course, which are very few of the other touring car, WTCR, touring car, TCR series do. So that's a different aspect to that as well. And I think they've kept the cap on it from that point of view. But Hyundai Group Motorsport, HDMS, have thrown a lot at it, both in marketing and development. They've seen the benefit, of course they have. I think rationalising what you're talking about, Elantra versus Veloster, it's called Avante in other parts of the world as well, and bears a striking similarity to the i30N sedan as it's sold in Australia, or Fastback as it's sold here in the UK. My rationalisation would be, we're developing this new car with the factory team and you guys can have it next year when it's all sorted out. That's what I would do in a very...
Well, yeah, but that's not what TCR is all about.
I know.
TCR is supposed to be plug and play. The cars are homologated, you go out, buy it, you run it, you race it, you either win with it or you don't.
Is there...
So that's why I'm a bit confused by that.
I think the reason for it, in fact, I know the reason for it, having spoken to Andrea Adamo, who is the guy at the top of Hyundai's motorsport division, and looks after WRC Rally as well, is that because not all of those cars are world cars, particularly in their N format. For example, we get the N30 hatchback here, we don't get the N Veloster, whereas in the States, you don't get the i30N hatchback, but you do get the Veloster. We get the hatchback, which you guys haven't got yet, but the Elantra is closer to being a world car. Although not always called Elantra, I think that's in more places, and that they're trying, well, this is their idea, they're trying to bring everything under one brand. Now, the cynic in me might say, yeah, but the saloon version is aerodynamically much more efficient, which is why Audi went with the saloon and Mazda were going to go with the saloon as well. So they may just feel that everybody else is catching up. You pay your money, you take your choice. Whatever, it's brought us interesting racing this year. I hope that costs don't spiral out of control. The only good thing about that is that if you buy one, if it becomes twice as expensive from one manufacturer than another, then I suspect, given it's a BOP formula, it won't take very long for people to vote with their wallets so that it doesn't become a class killer. Now, nevertheless, having said that, the top three crews, Jeremy, in the Drivers' Championship were all Hyundai drivers. The manufacturers we've mentioned, and the team, unsurprisingly, that won the championship was the Brian Herta Autosport with Curb Agajanian 33 team, and that was Gabby Chavez and Ryan Norman, who did it by about, what was it, 11 points between themselves and Harry Godsacker and Mark Wilkins at the end of the year?
Yeah, it was exactly 289 to eight. It ended up being a 1-2-3. There was another team that was kind of knocking on the door there, but certainly didn't have the consistency that that the Hyundais had. So yeah, they ended up being a pretty comfortably earned championship for Hyundai.
You could almost trace that gap at the end of the season. I know it's impossible because, you know, ifs and ands, blah, blah, blah. But that points gap, look to the start of the season and look to what they scored at the Sebring race early on.
Well, the Sebring race went perfectly for the team that finished second in the championship and not so well for the team that actually went on to win it. But the entire season flashed before the eyes of both of the defending TCR champions' cars at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, the turn two incident between the blue car and the black car, as we identified all the Hyundais by color, that ultimately resulted in those two cars finishing last and next to last, which then threw an 11-point advantage to Chavez and Norman, who went on to win the race. So it's really interesting, ifs and ands and buts and whatever. You can look back on the championship, but that was the defining race where all of a sudden the red car pulled out ahead.
Michael Lewis and Mason Filippi were third, Jeremy, only another 5 points further back. But all of those leading three squads had their moment in the sun at various points. And quite often, you and I were talking about them in a line of possibly four or five cars. But it always seemed to be those top three teams were there or thereabouts.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, arguably everybody was thereabouts.
That's,
I mean, there were what I think 13 cars that finished on the podium during this season, and that and as you said earlier on, the Alpha wasn't one of them. So you know, it was a remarkably open season. It really all came down to consistency. You know, that's the way the IMSA points system rewards consistency. You get 35 points for a win. There's just a 3-point differential between first and second, a 2-point differential between second, third, fourth and fifth, and then just 1 point down from there. So if you have a bad finish, it's going to cost you dearly in the points. And that's really what it boils down to, this season boiled down to, that the overall champions had just the one really bad day, whereas the next three or four cars had a couple or perhaps even three poor days. So that's really what it boiled down to. It was a very, very open championship.
Yeah, and that's exactly how you could describe Gavin Ernstone and John Morley in the Audi, who finished as fourth place in the Drivers' Championship with a win at the first round of the championship. Mid-Ohio, they took the top step as well. And then they had a second at WeatherTech. But peppered around that, there was a few too many sheer results that kept them away from the top three.
They either won the race, which they did twice, finished second once, finished third once, or they were nowhere to be seen because of bad luck or whatnot, or bad strategy. And it actually got to the point where they won the race at Daytona and then they had four bad races. And I talked briefly with Gavin Ernstone after that fourth race, and he said, you know, I can't justify it. It's too much. It's just not fun anymore. Oh, wait, next weekend he goes on to get two podiums. And of course, the race wins. So very up and down season for that duo. They did want to finish in the top three of the championship, but the good news is it looks like they'll be back to try it again. And kicking things off at Daytona, will they be defending a race win?
And John Morley, very, very good driver, good driving talent, Jeremy. But I thought Gavin's driving back in the last season and the beginning of this really came on. He drove smart. He knows he's not the quickest driver out there. He had a job to do. And, you know, that's what he went out and did. Tried to keep out his trouble as best he can. Sometimes, you know, yeah, can't affect that. But I thought he and John had a pretty good season.
John Morley, for me, was possibly the standout on the year. But that's the great thing about TCR and about the Michelin Pilot Challenge, is that you can come in there without two top line, acknowledge two top line drivers and be competitive and in contention for the championship. That's all you can ask for. Yeah, Gavin, he's not going to claim he's as quick as some of these other guys. You know, he's a gentleman driver, effectively, but he is getting a lot better. I mean, he didn't have a lot of experience coming into these last 2 years. He's gained a lot of that now. He's certainly getting faster and more strategic and learning more about what it takes to have a car running at the front. So, you know, hats off to them all the way around. And, you know, three DNFs is what took him out of the championship running here. But even with that, they were only 21 points behind the overall champion. So, yeah, it was a tremendous season for that Roadshagger team.
Behind them in fifth position, Max Faulkner and James Vance. That's another Audi, just another handful of points further back. I've got to be honest, Jeremy, I quite like the way they went about their racing as well, James and Max this year in the Audi.
Absolutely. And again, it's three DNFs. You know, that's what cost them a chance to challenge for the championship, because Max Faulkner put that car on pole position three times during the year. And James Vance is he's a very underrated driver. James is quick. And obviously
in
so
anything.
Is Max, because he put the car. Yeah, exactly. And so is Max. So, to end up fifth in the championship with just the one win and actually only other one other podium to go with it is way, way, way short of what they deserved.
I know people say that these cars don't drive like front-wheel drive cars. Ultimately, they are still front-wheel drive cars. And there are some drivers, Jeremy, who just don't get on with racing a front-wheel drive car. And people like James and Max, who've jumped in from other forms of racing, did a really, really good job in getting their heads around the vagaries of that style of race car.
Yeah, I mean, more so for the champions, really. You know, Gabby Chavez and Ryan Norman.
Good point.
For goodness sake, they're both race winners in Indy Lights, particularly recently for Ryan Norman. I mean, he was doing Indy Lights last year, for goodness sake, in 2019. It was sort of a contender for the championship. Gabby Chavez was a champion in Indy Lights. He's driven Indy cars. He's driven the DPI cars as well, and hopefully he'll be doing that again for next year. So, they come from completely different backgrounds to these other guys. It is a big learning curve, particularly for Ryan Norman, but he took to it like a duck to water.
Yeah, James Vance, Shea, proving the adage that racing anything is a good thing to do if you're a racing driver. A lot of drivers might have turned their noses up at racing a TCR car, but he's kept his name in the frame. He did a really good job this year, and next year stays with the same team but steps up to GS.
In an Audi GT4 for FastMD, being joined by Alex Papadopoulos coming into his third season of racing. James has been in ST, TCR, now TCR, for quite some time. So this is another big step up for him. But after the season that we saw, and as Jeremy rightly said, it was a lot of bad luck because we knew the car was fast, having it be on pole position so many times throughout the season. Next year should be an interesting experiment to see how James gets along with a little bit more horsepower underneath his right foot.
Alex, who finished 13th in the championship, although didn't do all of the rounds, of course. He was another Hyundai pilot, as were the two in sixth position, Parker Chase and Spencer Brockman. Shea, you can have first crack at these two.
If they hadn't missed the first race of the championship at Daytona, Parker Chase, remember, was originally slotted to do a full season with the Lexus in GTD. He was supposed to be alongside Jack Hawksworth, as it turned out, for the season. So that's why he didn't run at Pilot Challenge for the first round of the championship. But he and Spencer managed to make quite a formidable team. They didn't get the race win, but they did appear on the podium 4 times throughout their 9 races. So I look forward to seeing what will come if they continue on in the series for 2021, because as of yet, we haven't heard any plans from Spencer Brockman. We know Parker Chase will be back in a Hyundai.
Indeed. So 7th position on his own because of some swapping and changing around in the Honda team. Jeremy was speaking about that earlier on. Ryan Eversley didn't get a win on the season. In fact, I don't think he got a podium this year, right?
Yeah, he had one podium.
One podium, yes, he did. He'll not be overly happy with that, I think, Ryan.
Well, no, I'm not sure about that. I mean, his co-driver through the year was Taylor Hagler, who this was her first experience of this sort of level of racing. So she had a very, very steep learning curve. All things considered, it was a good year. Taylor came on strong all of a sudden with the change to the BOP at Mid-Ohio. She put the car on pole position, which was pretty shocking considering her lack of experience. In the first race, they got their only podium of the year. She had to miss one race because she was exposed to COVID-19. So she missed the second race of the season at Sebring. But other than that, they drove the whole year together and, came on very, very well, actually. It was a good year for Taylor, certainly. And therefore, by definition for Ryan, often he had quite a bit of work to do in the race because of Taylor's lack of experience. But, all things considered, it was a good year, I would say, for that team. You know, it was a slow start for them, but towards the end of the year, and again, down to some degree to the BOP, as it was then, before IMSA kind of took control of it, but ended up pretty strong, and they were top five five of the last six races. So it was a good strong year to them. And going back briefly to Spencer Brockman and Parker Chase, their best qualifying run of the year was only fourth, whereas Taylor actually put her car on pole position.
Fair
so
point.
Again, it's consistency that pays in the Michelin Pilot Challenge.
And finished ninth in the driver's standings, by the way, for Taylor. Sandwiched in between those two teammates, Roy Block and Tim Lewis, were the alpha drivers. We've spoken about the alphas again. A little bit more reliability from that car. It certainly had the pace at certain times. Seemed as well, and there is a bit of strategy to play out in the Michelin Pilot Challenge. I don't know whether they got the right side of the strategy or the wrong side of the strategy in that alpha team sometimes, but they weren't always doing it exactly the same way as everybody else.
No, and when you're kind of fighting rear guard action against all the phalanx of Hyundais in particular, you kind of have to try something a little bit different from time to time. But no, it's a really good effort by that whole KMW TMR engineering team, and they certainly were punching above their weight. It was that middle part of the season with four DNFs in five races.
Yeah.
That was the killer blow to them in terms of getting any hope of a strong championship placing. But hats off to that team. They work really, really hard. Roy Block, he's worked so hard on his driving. He's also been driving an SRO this season as well. And that extra experience has really helped him because he's qualified that car very strongly on a number of occasions, including third for the season finale. He was top three in both of the races at Mid-Ohio as well on the grid. So, Ryan has made huge strides in his driving. Ryan Block, you wouldn't think of him as being an Argentinian. Might not be your first thought of where his nationality, but he is indeed Argentinian. Not that that's relevant, but good guy, works really hard, and I certainly hope they're going to be back. And I would love to see a second alpha running alongside them this year. Tim Lewis Jr., he's been around this sport quite a long time. He's been away for quite a long time, but he certainly has a good experience and he showed his pace.
Yeah, and there is another car, of course. We have seen two alphas running in the past. Running up the top 10 in the drivers, Stephen Simpson and Michael Johnson for Audi. Always a great story, but they didn't do the full season share, so they were a few points down. But by far the best finishes for them in the early part of the season. And although of the non-full season runners, that's what put them up in 10th position.
Yeah, they got two podiums on the season, kicking things off at Daytona. It looked pretty good for Audi. And then the final round of the championship in which they contested was Mid-Ohio, which again was a strong weekend for Audi as a whole. But it wasn't a season that was going necessarily their direction, but that's not why they stepped aside. It was actually health concerns that caused Michael Johnson, Stephen Simpson duo to step away, realizing that they were going to a lot of the same tracks that they'd already been to, and they hadn't been particularly competitive at Sebring or Michelin Raceway Road Atlanta, and they didn't feel safe going all the way across the country to WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. They were very open about that and honest. So it wasn't necessarily... It was smarts this year. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Well, they've got a different plan in mind for next year. They're going with a different manufacturer and a different team. So we wish them the best of luck and can't wait to see what that duo can bring.
They're jumping over to Hyundai and Veloster, are they?
Correct, with Brian Hurd Autosport.
Okay.
It's a good plan.
Yeah, no, that is pretty smart for form an orderly line. Outside the top 10, Jeremy, people who didn't have a full season for whatever reasons on the year, and many of them, as Shears said, were entirely understandable. But some decent names there, Matt Pombo and Mike Lamara, Ben Waddell and Alex Papadopoulos, Brian Henderson and Shelby Blackstock. Well, they had no luck anywhere, to be honest. Chris Miller, Mikey Taylor. There's some decent names in there that we've recognised from down through the years.
Yeah, and I think if we'd we started off the season really strong in TCR with a good number of cars. Unfortunately, with the COVID-19 really hit TCR hard.
Yes.
It almost halved the field. Quite frankly, not quite that bad, but it took away a good almost half the field, to be honest.
Yeah.
And so that was costly, but. Where were we going with that?
Just drivers outside.
Oh, other drivers. Yeah. Look, so therefore, there were actually only 8 cars that competed in every race of the championship, as you say, for a variety of reasons. But there were certainly some good people that came in. It was good to see Copeland Motorsports come in. We started off the season with the 47 Motorsports team looking to run a couple of Hyundais. That they kind of faded away, unfortunately, halfway through the season. Then Copeland Motorsports came in with one Hyundai for a couple of races. 2 16-year-olds, Tyler Gonzalez and Tyler Maxson. Those two are very, very quick, and they are going to be contenders. They'll be running a full program next season. They'll be running 2 cars next season, possibly even 3. So Copeland Motorsports does the job properly. That's going to be interesting to see how that pays out, of course. They're staying with Hyundai, so it's going to be pretty much a Hyundai-dominated field in terms of numbers, which is kind of good news and bad news. So they were certainly very strong. Mikey Taylor only did a couple of races this year. He is quick and has already confirmed his program for next season, so that's great news. And then the other teams that came in and showed well were certainly Atlanta Speedworks from time to time. We hope to see them back on a full-time basis with the Hondas because they were very solid. And then another team that's really interesting that came in just for that final round of the year was Van der Steur Racing.
Yes.
The Van der Steurs, you might remember from way back in LMP2. It's the son, Rory.
Porsche Spyder they ran, didn't they?
Yeah, for a little while, didn't they? And also particularly the Lola LMP2 car, the Nissans. Rory has fired up his father, and they bought a couple of cars actually from the 47 Motorsports team. That's going to be really interesting to see how they do next season, because Rory, he's a youngster, just 20 years of age, I think he is, and they've got Danny Formal alongside him. And Danny Formal is a name that very few people outside of karting had heard of before this season, certainly outside of karting. But he showed himself to be a real talent this season. And that's going to be a team to watch, I think, for next year.
Yeah, did some radical racing as well, that team, down through the years. Adam Pecorari drove for them, the Van der Steurs. You're listening to an IMSA Radio and Radio Show Limited special programme as we look back on the Michelin Pilot Challenge. We've been delving through TCR for the first part of the show, and congratulations to Brian Hurt at Autosport and the winning drivers for all of their hard work. But as we've said in all of these review shows, we must give great credit to all of the manufacturers, teams, drivers, those who support them, and of course IMSA and the promoters for getting what amounted to a full season, pretty much, into the record books for 2020. For a few years now, the top class GS has been running to GT4 Formula. And that has brought, for 2020, 8 manufacturers to the party. The top 4 separated by 16 points at the end of the season. Great to see, Jeremy, because I know I say this quite often, but I think it bears repeating. When IMSA went to GT4, the doommongers, the sky-falling-in merchants, would have had us believe it was going to kill the category. Well, the category wasn't doing great before then, and Scott Atherton and the team at that time looked at GT4 and decided to go across to it. And quite frankly, it took not very long at all for that to build up. And 2020, with all of the potential spoilers, actually turned out once again to be a cracking year with 8 different manufacturers.
Yeah, absolutely sensational year it was. And it was so open. Yeah, all of the manufacturers had had a podium finish, which is pretty remarkable. Yeah, all except for Ford and Porsche had a win. And it's surprising that the Multimatic Ford didn't end up on the top of the podium.
That's an interesting start for those two manufacturers, particularly with the two cars they have. Yes, very interesting.
True. You think those? Unlikely that Porsche and Ford were the two that didn't win, isn't it? But no, it was a great year, absolutely tremendous year. I think again on the balance performance side, generally speaking, because of that, it shows that they did a good job. But for me, there were definitely two cars that appeared to have, for whatever reason, a little bit of an edge this season, and in terms of results, then two teams pretty much ran away with it at the front of the field.
And those were the Aston Martin and the Mercedes Benz.
Audi.
Audi only finishing third in the Manufacturers' Championship. It was Aston Martin that took it from Mercedes AMG by 7 points, and then another 5 points further back to Audi. BMW 4 points further back in fourth position. So that's that top four that I was talking about. In fairness, only 10 points between Ford and McLaren in fifth and sixth, and another 2 points further back for Porsche. Chevrolet with the singleton entry a little bit further back. But two distinct groups there, Jeremy, in terms of the manufacturers. But it gave us plenty to talk about. And it, again, I know that this isn't a world championship, but for the manufacturers, that title really means something. And I've seen, at various stages of the season, both Aston Martin, Mercedes AMG and Audi Sport Customer Racing, along with BMW, really promoting this hard for their customer teams this year. It means something.
It does. And it came down to, I think, to consistency and numbers as well. I mean, you talked about Chevrolet being, there was just the one Chevrolet this year. There'll be more next year, which is great to see. Porsche, there was really only one Porsche that ran all the way through the year, a couple from time to time. Aston Martins were there in force. Mercedes was there in force. Audi also, surprisingly, only the one car pretty much, there was one car running up front. That same team ran a second car in most of the races, and there was another Audi, another couple of Audis that appeared from time to time. Next year there should be some more Audis. So the manufacturers' battle really came down to, I think, Aston Martin was the best car this season, and certainly they had a fantastic team there in Core Motorsports running it. To switch across from Ford, that team has been affiliated with for many, many, many years. Dean Martin, who's one of the principals there at Core Motorsports, he was a factory development engineer at Ford for many, many years. It was a very well-earned championship, but the numbers and, Aston Martin, that was the car to have. There were a couple of other teams switched to Aston Martin for the latter part of the year. I think there might well be another one or two for next year as well. So, I think that the future looks really, really bright for this championship in general.
In this type of racing, Shea, whether it's GT3 or GT4, we talked about it, didn't we, in the IMSA WeatherTech Sportscar Championship. The manufacturer that wins the championship, people start looking towards that particular piece of equipment. The Aston generally in GT4 form thought to be one of the cars that is most easy to drive consistently for those drivers who have who don't get behind the wheel a lot. And certainly that was the case with the previous version of this car. It would appear that the new Vantage has lost none of its drivability and usability and user friendliness. And that is so important. I mean, we saw BMW, they won the most races this year, but they didn't have the consistency.
Yeah, three wins on the season for BMW, all coming from Turner Motorsport between two different cars, and actually three different driver combinations, as it turned out. But because they had those wins, but they also had a lot of bad finishes, they wound up fourth in the championship. Yeah. Versus, as you rightly say, Aston Martin, with a car that was very drivable. Arguably, the two drivers that won the championship are both pro or semi-pro. But in terms of this car being good for the non-professional driver, all you need to look towards is Volt Racing as it ran this year. The bright yellow Aston Martin showed up to the second round at Road Atlanta, and Alan Brynjolfsson was on fire in qualifying, figuratively, not literally. Yeah. Although that car did not finish the race, Alan did go through and set the fastest lap of the race. So that in itself is an argument as to why the Aston Martin is the car that you want to have for a pro-am driver lineup with the true am.
Should say that Turner Motorsport did finish third in the teams, but BMW, as she rightly said, finishing fourth in manufacturers. It was core with the Aston that won the 60 team from the 39 of Carbon with Peregrine and the Audi, and then Turner third ahead of Riley's 35 AMG GT4 and the Murillo Racing similar car, the 56 team, top six made up by Archangel Motorsports in the number seven. As far as drivers is concerned, I've just scrolled down and it took me quite a long time. We go down to position 74. Now, in fairness, everybody who even starts a race gets a point. So there are some people at the bottom of the field who basically just started a race or two. As far as we want to look, 146 drivers, by the way, in Michelin Pilot Challenge in both classes across the year. Just pick up a couple of people that further down. Nice to see coming back, Jeremy, and mentioning their names. Dan Clark, Speedy Dan Clark, Ashley Freiberg coming back as well. Nice to see that type of driver getting drives back in this series.
Yeah, great. Really good, isn't it? And yeah, there was lots of stories like that, really, during the year. And it was a super open, competitive season. Just some great racing all the way through. And, you know, big variety of drivers in there, as you say. And certainly good. Yeah, I think this GT4 platform, it's relatively affordable. And with the way the Michelin Pilot Series is run, it's basically set up as a pro-am series. So an am driver who has the funding can hire a pro and off you go. So it does open doors for quite a few drivers. Unfortunately, on the overall driver rating system, there's four categories of drivers nowadays, with platinum, gold, silver and bronze. Only silver and bronze are allowed to drive in the Michelin Pilot Challenge Series. So golds aren't welcome anymore, which is certainly a shame for a lot of drivers who are pro, or you're almost fully pro. It makes it very difficult these days for drivers to kind of earn a living. But that's a completely different subject. And overall, though, the racing once again was tremendous. And the fact that so many teams, Jim Cox and Dylan Murray, they finished third in the championship in the driver championship for Riley Motorsports and that Mercedes. That's the perfect scenario of a pro-am driver. Jim Cox, he's made a career for himself and has the money to go do this. He's hired young Dylan Murray, and Jim Cox has come on enormously as a driver over the last 2 years. And they had the one win at Daytona, where they were helped, of course, by Jeroen Blekemolen. But all the way through the year, that car was competitive. Unfortunately, they just had a really bad spell in the middle of the year. They had two DNFs in a row, which cost them hugely in the points. Other than that, they were very much in contention all the way through the year. So that just shows what can be done with a true pro-am lineup. So third in the points at this level is a great result for them.
Yeah, let's start for no other reason than it is the top 20, but also picking up on what you've said there. In 20th position, another great example, Robin Liddell and Frank Depew in that solo Chevrolet that we were talking about. And they did take a win on the season, Jeremy. Again, their customary win, at least one win, it seems. A win and I think they had a third place as well, didn't they, in the year?
Yeah, and should have had another win if they didn't mess up on the driving time.
On the driver time, yes.
They were seconds short of... they got a bit too cute with the timing, so had to come in and make a pit stop on the last lap. That cost them a second win. There's a backstory to that, which is probably going to take longer than is necessary, but your point is there. And Frank, again, he's improved his driving rapidly as this season has progressed under the tutelage, particularly of Robin Liddell, but also with Andrew Davis in there as well for the longer races. Yeah, and that's really good to see. Frank he qualified ninth for the season finale at Sebring. That was far and away his best qualifying run of the year, and again bodes very, very well for 2021.
Yeah, and they missed a couple of finishes in the middle of the season as well, didn't they? Do you get 0 points if you blow your drive time? No, they didn't blow that drive time. They had to come back in again.
You just get minimal points.
Yeah.
They didn't actually start the two races at Mid-Ohio.
Correct.
Because of a crash in practice.
That's right. Thank you for reminding me that. It's a feature of the season in all the categories that we've been talking about, that not everybody did every race, or if they did, they didn't necessarily do it with the same drivers. That is true of Gregory Leofug, who's in 19th position. Aston Martin Wings next to his name for 2020, Shea.
Yes, Gregory Leofug, who drove with two different teams this year, if memory serves, BMW and the Aston Martin. But he is that stable pair of hands that whenever you need somebody who's good, you can hire him and put him in the car. And he actually wound up driving in the BMW after the accident for Devin Jones at VIR. So Gregory was stepping in once again, and he did a really good job with Bimmerworld. But again, luck just wasn't on the side of the BMW team this year.
Both scoring 164 points, but not listed together because they weren't in the same car with Scott Maxwell. So Scott Maxwell is scored in 18th position in the Drivers' Championship. It'll have been a while, Jeremy, that Scott Maxwell's been that far down a championship, although again, didn't do the full championship this year.
Yeah, that's right. Didn't do the last couple of races, Scott. You know, the veteran Canadian, he's been a stalwart of this championship over the years. Second in starts only to Owen Trinkler, who didn't race most of this season. The team TGM didn't do any races other than the opener, but we'll be back for next year. So Scott, massively experienced. He's right up there. He's had more top five finishes than everybody else. He actually scored his 100th top 10 finish this year, which is again the record in this championship. It's still as quick as ever. Had absolutely no lock on his side. Was taken out a couple of times by a couple of silly moves. But he and Sebastian Prio were very competitive when they weren't being knocked off the racetrack. The fact they only had one podium finish to their credit was really way less than they deserved.
Yeah, Sebastian Prio finishes up in 11th position by dint of the fact that he did do the full season, although there was a nightmare, wasn't there, at the opener for Seb. Where did we get to? 17th position then, again on his own, Dylan McEwen for BMW. Shea.
He missed a race this year, and that's what dropped him down a little bit further than he should have been. Dylan, who drove most of the season with Nick Galante, who wound up in 13th in points. But again, we're used to talking about the Bimmerworld organization with two of their GS cars as being top five in the Drivers' Championship. Nightmare year for all of them.
Above them, one position, Porsche. Jan Heerlen, Thomas Collingwood. Well, talk about a new lease of life, Jeremy. Jan Heerlen has always been a quick driver. He had a pretty decent year this year. Every time he was in a car, whether it was in this championship or in the IMSA championship, nailed his colours to the Porsche mast, he was quick, and it was a car that we had to keep an eye on.
Yeah, very much so. You know, it was a good year for Jan. I mean, he hasn't been driving regularly for quite a few years. And you know, having this opportunity with the BGB team to drive with Tom Collingwood all the way through the year definitely helped him. He had a fastest race lap at Road Atlanta. The car was quick. You know, Tom is another of those gentleman drivers who doesn't have a lot of experience, but again, is getting better. And Jan was always fast in this car, and he used that as kind of a springboard. He got the opportunity to drive with Wright Motorsports in the GTD car in the IMSA World Tech Sports Car Championship, and was stellar in the few races he did there. You could almost say he shaded Patrick Long, because certainly he was the one who got all the headlines. He got a pole position and a fastest lap in the GTD ranks in the car he shared with Patrick for the long distance races. So yeah, it was a great year for him, and good to see BGB here with that car for the whole season. And it was a good solid campaign. The best result was only a seventh, but kind of deserved and could easily have had much better than that. So a good solid first full season for that driver and team for Tom Collingwood.
15th down to 12th, all BMW drivers, but all singly mentioned again because of the way their seasons worked out. Vin Barletta at 15, Shear. Then we've got Bill Oberlin at 14, missed a race because of the COVID protocols. At 13, Nick Galanta and James Clear at 12. Let's start with Vin Barletta.
Vin had I'm going to call it a breakout season. He seemed to put everything together at various points, went out and got his first race win with the help of Robbie Foley, came back the next weekend and actually had a pretty bad result in practice and qualifying. So we were joking that perhaps the Turner victory tacos were not good for Vin. But when you go to the last round of the championship, drove the entire race by himself. That resulted in the car being disqualified because he went over drive time and his co-driver didn't meet drive time. But it was experience, and it was launching forward for Vin, who we assume will continue to share this program alongside Bill Oberlin and Robbie Foley going forward. But it was a good year for Vin.
Bill Oberlin, what can we say, Jeremy, that hasn't already been said? Record-breaking year for him in terms of his victories in North American sports car racing. He shows no signs of losing the hunger. You could be jaded. You could be thinking, why am I doing this? What more have I got to give? You just can't imagine Bill ever even having those thoughts in his mind.
No, I don't think so. I mean, this would have been another championship contending year if not for the fact that he and Robbie Foley DNF'd at Daytona the first race of the year. And as you say, he missed the last two races. He missed the last one because of the COVID problem. But he also missed the previous one because I think it was Vin, wasn't it, who crashed
one of the
cars at Raceway Laguna Seca. So one car was scratched and Bill stepped out of his car so Vin could drive with Robbie Foley.
Correct.
But other than that, they were absolutely contenders pretty much every time out. Bill got a fastest race lap. Was that Robbie got the fastest race lap? The one win on the season, but easily could have been more. And, Robbie Foley ended up fourth in the points. And that's really, Robbie, despite the fact he was driving two different cars, it was great. It's really really challenging year for Robbie Foley. But for Bill Oberlin, still very much in contention every time out.
Nick Galanta.
Best finish of sixth on the year for Nick, which will not leave him as a very happy bunny. But with the COVID coming in and setting in, it actually wound up being a blessing in disguise for Nick because he and his wife welcomed a little baby girl into the world and he got to spend a lot more time at home with her. So although he didn't get to take home any hardware, he certainly got that benefit of extra daddy-daughter time.
James Clear in 12th again, that position on his own, Jeremy, another BMW pilot.
Yeah, and as Shea was saying, disappointing year for the Bimmer World team. Of course, that huge crash at VIR, which sidelined Devin Jones for the rest of the year, that put a dampener on things. And just, it just seems nothing could go their way this season. And I'm not sure that, I mean, they've got one of the best strategists in the business there, but yeah, for some reason it just didn't pan out for the team the way it should have done this season. Again, just the one podium finish, and actually no other top five finishes for Bimmerworld this year, which is just really, really surprising. Not one, a year to look back and say, okay, fine, we know we can run at the front, let's try again next year. Hopefully that's the thinking there at Bimmerworld.
Yeah, where's that big factory reset button and let's head into 2021 with no regrets. Just outside the top 10 at 11 again.
By the way, just to add to James, the fact it was a disappointing year, but he didn't start, of course, that race at VIR after Devon had crashed the car. So he didn't do all 10 races. And if you'd have given him kind of a nominal amount of points, then he would have been in the top six or seven in the championship rather than down in 12th.
So, no, that's very fair. Very, very fair. Just outside the top 10 at 11. And again, driving on his own. We've mentioned his name already. Sebastian Seb Prio, driving for Multimatic and Ford. Fourth generation racing driver, I think now, from the Prio family. Andy, his dad, basically took the year off, bought a F350 pickup truck and a fifth wheel trailer, and they had some lad and dad time once we got restarted in July. There's no doubt to me, Shea, that Seb has got a bit of talent.
Well, and after the performance that we saw last year at Road Atlanta for the final round of the championship, when Seb made his series debut and he and Austin Cindric came out and won the race in quite a good fashion, if you told me that Seb was only going to get one podium this year, I would have laughed in your face. It was a very up and down year for Seb. He had a lot of different co-drivers coming into that car. And the fact that the Ford didn't get a win, that in itself is surprising. But I thought that Seb Priya was going to be one of those drivers in the top three of the championship. I'm expecting that for 2021. So let's see what he can do.
Second best Ford driver, only James Pesek for the Blue Oval, who finished further up the rankings, Jeremy. But ultimately a disappointing season for Seb?
Certainly. But again, he drove pretty much the whole year with Scott Maxwell. Yeah. It was just the last couple of races that the different co-drivers, Hayley Deegan, hopped in for some experience at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. And then Marco Signoretti, who's a youngster from Canada, who's pretty darn quick. Mm. He did the final race. But again, just no luck for that team. And, a DNF in the first race of the season when there was a huge amount of cars meant just 1 point. So that cost them very dearly in the overall championship. Again, just give them a sensible amount of points and they would have been challenging very definitely in the top four or five, as they were indeed for the entire year. So just an unfortunate year for Multimatic Motorsports and Seb Prio.
Yeah, the Ford. There was times when the Ford just didn't look like it had the pace.
But it was generally, the Ford always seems to chew through its tyres more than some of the other cars. I think they did a better job of that this year. They managed that very well, and the car was competitive more often than not. Let's put it that way.
So that was 11th position. 10th is another driver who welcomed a number of co-drivers across the year. And on 207 points, so just a point, in fact, just a couple of points from being in the top eight, because 209 points was the driver, James Pesek, as we mentioned, in the top eight. And that was Bryce Ward. By no means, Jeremy, a spring chicken. Still loving his motor racing. Keeps telling me, he's been telling me for the last 3 or 4 years that this was his last year. I think he had one of his best years this year behind the wheel. And his driving, he looked like he was enjoying it, and that translated to pace and consistency on the track.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, he out-qualified his son Russell at the final race of the season. So hopefully that'll really fire him up. I mean, the last couple of years, you say, he keeps saying not only it's going to be last season, it's going to be his last race. But he keeps on coming back for more, and he's getting quicker and quicker and quicker. Absolutely superb year he had. I think it would have helped him if he'd had one co-driver all the way through the year.
Agree.
But again, with the parallel programs in Europe and North America, it makes it often, made it often difficult, particularly with the COVID restrictions that were in place. So, yeah, I mean, his co-driver's always fast, of course. But, yeah, it was a good year for Bryce. And, yeah, he really stepped up for the plate in the year to qualify sixth for that final race of the year. And another three times also he was qualifying in the top 10 in a very, very competitive field when there are always well over 20 Michelin Pilot Challenge GS cars. Stout effort indeed by Bryce Ward.
I seem to remembering on the edge of or within the top 10 quite a lot when we were doing the commentary. Best finish of a second in the first race of the season. Should mention what Jeremy was talking about there. Windward Racing took on ATP Motorsport in Germany and ensured the continuation of that august brand, and mainly Russell, but Bryson involved in running that as well. So there was a certain amount of toing and, if you will, throwing backwards and forwards between the US, where the Wards are based, and into Europe, and they are running programmes and indeed doing races on both sides of the puddle in 2020. Corey Lewis and Sheena Monk for McLaren, ninth position. Share just a point ahead of Bryce.
The biggest takeaway from me from this team and this duo in particular, Sheena's qualifying and then opening stint at Road America was revolutionary, because that was a turning point in her driving. We've been watching her drive for a couple of years now, and that in itself was the first performance that we saw from her that made all three of us go, wow. That it said, Mia, as a whole, the team had a lot of ups and downs. They led quite a bit. There were some very questionable strategy calls over the course of the race, the season, I should say. But the fact that they got that race win, and it was in such a dominant fashion, to be able to come out and say, okay, we can compete with these drivers, it was a perfect advertising for the duo that is Corey and Sheena.
The Motorsport in Action team, Jeremy, such a lovely set of people. They enjoy their motor racing. They've been very loyal to McLaren. Great to see them get that victory this year.
Well, it really was. I mean, you know, the McLaren's a bit of an outlier in terms of equating the performance of these cars. And IMSA will look back and, you know, they messed up at Road America. That car was way faster than it should have been. But again, let's not take nothing away from Sheena. She did a super job in qualifying, put the
you've
car
got to deliver
on the grid,
if you've got the
then,
advantage.
And that car was, you know, light years quicker than everybody else in a race. So Corey Lewis took it to a clear win there. Later on in the year, there were big ups and downs in terms of how competitive that car really was. And I think finally towards the end of the year, IMSA again worked really, really hard to get it right. And, you know, it was a regular top 10 sort of qualified. It's the last couple of races Sheena qualified in the top 10. And then Corey Lewis was fast. He got a fastest race lap at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. So given Sheena's, you know, total lack of experience, prior to 2 years ago, I guess she started. Mm. But, you know, she's still very relatively compared to everybody else.
Yeah.
She certainly did a really, really good job this season. And Corey Lewis, again, taking full advantage of his experience. And it was a very good building year for them then together. And, you know, Sheena really did step it up.
You've made me think about something there that I hadn't really in the season, when you're talking about balance of performance. We're, you know, very close to the IMSA technical team, and I believe they do a very, very good job. They gather a huge amount of information, they process it, and then they turn that into the changes in the balance of performance. And, you know, we've talked about this before. We don't want to see it happening after every race, because that's not what it's meant to be. As the season goes on, you have more and more data. What we've had this year, Jeremy, of course, is a whole season really squished in to probably two-thirds to half of the time. And that means the races have come pretty thick and fast. So it's been a challenge for those in the technical department, because it's not just the Michelin Pilot Challenge that they're looking after, of course. They're looking after all of the championship. And that has obviously thrown up its logistical challenges, because there are regulations within IMSA about when you have to tell people you're making a BOP and how close that can be to the next race.
Yeah, that certainly made it additionally challenging. And again, you know, hats off to IMSA for really taking the bull by the horns. You know, they came up with a different way of measuring the both the BMW and the McLaren. They were the two kind of outliers there, with the for a variety of reasons. I'm not going to get into the technicalities of it, probably because I probably don't fully understand it myself. It's over my head. But they really did, you know, work super hard on trying to iron everything out. And again, you know, generally speaking, they did a really, really good job at it. And, you know, certainly for BMW and McLaren in particular, it was much more higher highs, or particularly McLaren, a higher high, and lower lows, probably more so for BMW, than most of the other manufacturers during the season. But I think IMSA recognised the difficulties they faced and definitely addressed them.
Eighth position, the best of Blue Warble drivers. We've mentioned his name already, Jeremy. James Pesek for Ford. Never missed that car out there in its bright pink colours. 209 points, just a point further on from Sheena and Corey, and 2 points up on Bryce Ward. James Pesek in 2020.
Indeed, another guy who had a slew of different co-drivers, at least through the early part of the season, and then settled in with Chad McCombie, who joined in for round five, so almost halfway through the season, and did the rest of the year after that. You know, Chad, former champion in ST, former front runner in the NASCAR Truck Series, great guy. That was a really good combination. When those two got together, they got the consistency going again. But for James, too, he's another driver. He's a former fullback, I think, or linebacker, or whatever. He's a football player. In any case, not a little guy, but again, has worked really hard on his driving this season. So he had a few top 10 qualifying positions. He got better and better and better as the year went on. He qualified fourth fastest at Weatherset Raceway Laguna Seca in the ninth round of the championship. Another couple of top tens as well as that. So yeah, he really stepped it up. And that consistency he was able to gain alongside Chad McCombie brought them a slew of good results and a very well-deserved top 10 in the championship.
That's 209. 224 for Russell Ward, who was a point behind sixth position. But again, Russell, son of Bryce Shear, mentioned Bryce earlier on. He had a few different co-drivers alongside him. Seventh. Didn't get a win this year, but I think got a couple of podiums, didn't he? Podiat, including at the first race of the season, one of the longer races, which is one of the races that everybody really likes. Russell Ward, when he's good, he's very good.
Yes, six top five finishes this year for Russell. Unfortunately, the other four were outside of the top 15. That's what really threw this season out the window for Russell. And particularly thinking back to Mid-Ohio, the contact with it was Scott Maxwell and the Mustang, that really put a spin on things because he went and started so strongly. Both he and his dad on the podium at Daytona was a great result for Windward Racing, and the season just sort of it crested and fell like the waves in the ocean sort of do. For Russell, it was a disappointing year. He was expecting to come out and really compete for the championship, but I think it did hurt having so many different co-drivers in the car with him this year. Consistency helps Russell.
And he has been the driving force, pun absolutely intended, in the Winwood HTP side of things. He's been looking after a lot of the logistics along with the guys over in Germany. It just seems like sometimes Jeremy is, I won't say his heart wasn't in it, but maybe he wasn't quite giving it 100% of concentration. And when he does, he's really good. But when he doesn't, little mistakes creep in. I think he'd be the first to recognise that.
Possibly. Certainly, that mistake at Mid-Ohio when he took out Scott Maxwell, that was pretty silly. But he bounced back from that. But look, he qualified fantastically well. Yeah, only on two occasions was he outside the top two rows of the grid.
So he certainly got the pace over a lap or two.
Absolutely right, he has. And the Mercedes is good, as we've seen. That was competitive all the way through the season. So, yeah, some mistakes there, certainly. But he was the third best qualifier on the year. And it was a breakthrough year for Russell Ward, no question about it. You know, seventh place he'll be disappointed with. But as you say, just one point out of out of sixth, and really only a dozen out of the top three in the championship, and that you can put down to the DNFs they had during the season. There were two DNFs and two other, as Shay was saying, two other very poor finishes as well for a variety of reasons. So everything is there for Russell Ward to be a championship contender.
I just think he's got to understand. I think he knows this.
Look, he's actually still learning. Yeah, relatively new. This is his third season of racing, really, isn't it?
And I think he is beginning to understand that, because there was times when you and I were talking about him where we said, really sensible, heads up racing. He's got to learn, as every driver has, and let's remind ourselves, as Jeremy says, just how little experience he has in this form of racing, in any form of racing, that sometimes 8th position is going to be the points you're going to take, or 10th, or 11th. But that's way better than ending up on the tow truck and being last in a field that was, generally speaking, somewhere near or over 20 cars, Jeremy.
Yeah, and that was that was the problem. So as soon as he gets that straightened out, he'll be a championship contender, no question about it. Good year for Russell Ward.
Into the top six then, in his sixth position, with Porsche Shields next to their name, as that's what they started the season, I suppose. Trent Hindman, Alan Brynjolfsson, just a point ahead of Russell Ward. Jeremy, you can start with Trent and Alan. Trent, we kind of know what we're going to get with Trent, which is 100%. He was the closer. He was, generally speaking, in the standard races, the man who brought it home. Alan Brynjolfsson, very much the gentleman driver. And I thought Alan's driving improved. Another gentleman driver who's driving improved this year. And I think Alan will be pretty pleased with that.
Absolutely. He works very hard at this. He's a successful businessman, and he now wants to become a racing driver, and he's put his heart and soul into it. Started off the season, as you say, with a Porsche, disappointing results, and then switched to Aston Martin, and that just suited his style right away. I mean, he had no testing even before they brought that car out for the first time at Road Atlanta, and as Shay was saying, put the car fifth on the grid. He did the same at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. Having said that, he'd been competitive in the Porsche. He was five times in the top 10 out of the 7 races he did. Qualifying that car. So, every time he qualified the car, he was in the top 10 in the Porsche. But as I say, 2 top 5 qualifying results in the Aston Martin. He just found that car more to his liking. Ended up the season with 2 very well-deserved podium finishes. Trent Hindman, we know how good he is. He's a former champion in this series, a former champion in the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship as well. So, he's an accomplished driver. And four podium finishes, 6 in the championship, particularly having switched manufacturers and had some bad luck in several occasions during the year. Again, a strong result for that Archangel Motorsports team, as it was known as this year. Michael Johnson continues running the car, but now under the banner that he established many years ago as Archangel Motorsports.
7 points better off in 5th position, Shay, for Jeff Morsing and Eric Foss.
But a very disappointing season on the whole for Foss and Mosing. Murillo Motorsports, the number 56, this is the car that we are used to seeing top 3 of the championship. They didn't get a podium this year. Best finish of 4th came at the 3rd-to-last round of the season. They had 1 DNF, 1 finish outside of the top 10, but everything else was just very much meh. This was the season that the two of them will be looking to put behind them, as the two drivers we would hope and expect. We have no reason to believe anything otherwise, that they would come back for next year.
Yeah, not even the best of the AMG runners, which I think that will prick them as well.
No, but again, they have that consistency, as Shay was saying there. Just they're in the top 10 every race this season, except for the finale when they were 11th. That was good. The car had really, really good pace. Jeff was maybe a little bit more up and down than is normal for Jeff Mosing, but. But Eric Foss was fast as ever. Again, no good luck on their side. Not necessarily they had a lot of bad luck, but nothing seemed to fall their way. And there was one race at the end of the season, I can't remember which one it was now, where they were looking really, really good. I think, did they mess up the drive time thing and had to make an extra stop, or they got the strategy wrong, or I can't remember what it was, but they were certainly unfortunate not to get a podium finish.
Jeremy, what you've said there strikes a chord with me, because, you know, top 10 finishes. That's how you become a championship contender. And we've seen Jeff and Eric in the past be championship contenders. Is that not good enough now in Michelin Pilot's Challenge to just, quote unquote, be in the top 10? You've actually got to be doing a bit better than that, because the standards, the reliability and the finishing records of those who are going to be in the top four, higher than those two guys we've mentioned, are just that little bit better. Has it got to be podiums and wins rather than just top 10 finishes now, do you think?
Yeah, it's got to be probably top five. So look, you know, finishing with the season they had, that consistency, every race, finishing between 4th and 11th, that got them 5th in the points. They're only 5 points out of 3rd. So, you know, it was a good year for them. They'll look back and they'll be disappointed, but then they'll look back and say, hey, look, 5th in the points. Again, that's another true pro-am pairing, good Jeff point. Mosing and Eric Foss. So, again, you know, they had absolutely no lock on their side whatsoever this season, and they still end up 5th in the points. Good job.
Yeah, absolutely. Robbie Fawley, the last singleton driver that we've talked about, we've documented the BMW, in terms of the driver swaps. He finishes up Shear in fourth position, albeit only a couple of points behind third and 3 points ahead of fifth. So again, a little gaggle of drivers, much as we saw in terms of what we saw on the track with gaggles of cars fighting in various packs. It's exactly the same in the championship. So Robbie Fawley in fourth.
And I know that you typically ask us for our driver of the year, and I hate to give mine away early, but since I'm talking about Robbie, it's Robbie, because between two cars this year, I only wrote down his best results in my spreadsheet, not necessarily his results per car. He finished in the top five. That would be 6 times at the second, third, fourth, and then the last 3 rounds of the season. So a very good year. You take the Daytona drama aside, where the team kept having tire issues and ultimately parked both of the cars. Both of the cars scoring 1 point. Robbie Fawley would have been well up within the top 3. He would have possibly been fighting for a top 2 in the championship this year. And think about it for a second. He was driving in 2 different cars. That means he drove almost every lap of the season.
Yeah, and you know, that takes a lot of concentration. Absolutely agree. You're listening to an IMSA Radio and Radio Show Limited specialist. We look back on the IMSA Michelin Pilot Challenge for 2020. We've reached the top 3 in the drivers' standings. Jeremy, you've mentioned the third place drivers already, Dylan Murray and Jim Cox. You called them a perfect illustration of the Pro-Am. 237 points. Couple of points ahead of Robbie, round about, 22, 23 points away from second position, but best of the AMG Mercedes GT4 runners. And by the way, we should say that the top 4 in the championship were all driving different cars, different manufacturers. Jim and Dylan, I think they'll be happy with that, Jeremy, don't you?
Well, disappointing, really, in the end, because they were absolutely championship contenders. I think they might have been leading the points, actually, after round 4. They were certainly right there. My brain isn't sharp enough
First Road Atlanta. They had a really good run up to the First Road Atlanta. They had a couple of bad results after that.
That's right. Yeah, they got taken out at Road Atlanta, not their fault. And then also the problem at Mid-Ohio 1 as well. Again, forget what that was. I think they were taken out again there. So, you know, that just killed their championship aspirations. So put those two races aside right there. Another good, excellent year, as you would expect, of course, for Riley Motorsports.
Yeah, Riley Norwich, where is...
But again, hats off to Jim. You know, he probably needs a little bit more consistency in his qualifying, but twice he was in the top 6 on the grid. You know, a career best qualifying of 5th in the first Sebring race, 8th in the second Sebring race at the end of the year on the grid. So, you know, he did a really good job again this year, particularly this year, Jim Cox, just getting closer and closer to the top. And, you know, next year it's going to be a big, big, big year for him. They're stepping up, aren't they?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
That's LMP3.
LMP3 for next year. Which Jim has... Has Jim driven an LMP3 before? Hasn't he?
They did one race, didn't they?
They did one race.
Yes.
God, I thought my mind...
Sebring, a couple of years ago.
I thought that my mind wasn't failing me. Second position and the best of the Audis. Jeff Westfall, Tyler McQuarrie, the number 39 car, defending a fabulous year last year. Ultimately, they come up 34 points short, Shea. Where did it all go wrong for Jeff and Tyler?
Oh, well, this one is still hard to swallow, this far beyond it. VIR was the start of things not going well. It was the first time that that crew had finished outside of the top 10 in more than a year. Then we thought that was going to be the worst result for the crew. Well, no, there was a drive time mix up at Road Atlanta for the second race at Michelin Race by Road Atlanta that resulted in the car being parked so that they wouldn't therefore be disqualified. They finished 19th at that round, and then the car let them down at Sebring, and they actually had a drivetrain failure, resulting in their second DNF of the year. That is where our points gap came from, because ultimately they lost 20 points at the first DNF and then a further 20 points at the second DNF. That in itself would have kept it as a more competitive run to the end of the championship. But that doesn't mean that the people who didn't win are any less deserving. No. It just means that Westfall and McQuarrie are coming back even hungrier.
They still look very good, Jeremy. And they raced the Carbon team and the drivers. They raced, for the most part, very, very smartly indeed. And that win at WeatherTech towards the end of the season, when they bounced back after that horrible, horrible Road Atlanta 2, that really looked like they were back on track at that point.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was just, I can't remember what happened to the VAR. I can't remember what they only finished 12th there, and I honestly can't remember why, but it was Road Atlanta, the second Road Atlanta, that was a killer. Yeah, they got a bit too cute on the strategy there. Plus, they were undone by a full course caution right when they needed to make a pit stop. I mean, you know, in Steve Dynan, they've got one of the most experienced guys and best strategists in the entire field. And, you know, 99 times out of 100, they call the strategies absolutely perfectly. Unfortunately, yeah, they cut it a bit too fine there, weren't able to make the pit stop. And then Shea's right. You know, when she said they would have been DQ'd, they wouldn't have been DQ'd. They'd have been put to the very back. And by actually retiring the car, actually meant that instead of falling to 22nd, they finished 19th. So that's why they pulled that car out there. So, you know, it gained them a couple or three points, but that wasn't enough to keep them in contention. But it was that one result there that really cost it. Of course, Sebring was, by then it was all over in any case. So, you know, thankfully for them, probably that driveline failure in the final round didn't end up costing him the championship. It was the mistake at Road Atlanta that did. But yeah, but for Tyler McQuarrie, four times on pole position, including the last three races of the year. You know, the Audi was good. Tyler McQuarrie, we know, is very, very good. Again, another of those drivers is probably a bit underrated overall. He's perhaps best known for his drifting exploits, but he's a heck of a race car driver, been around a long time. And Jeff Westfall, you know, that's a great combination, those two Bay Area Californians, but good guys, fast. And, you know, they were a little unlucky to end up second in the points for what was a very, very good season once again for that team.
I still wonder if there might have been better share at Road Atlanta when that safety car coming out, just coming in and pitting in a closed pit and taking the time penalty for that, and still therefore being able then to race from then on to the end and to the checkered flag. And I haven't really done the stats on that, and I didn't dare, just in case they would have finished better than 19th.
Well, they would have, because it would have been Jeff Westfall riled up on fresh tires, picking people off for at least a couple more places. So you are correct in that. But I think by the time that they realized that they should have done that, it was already too late.
Yeah, absolutely. Which leaves us with our championship winners. And as Shea rightly said, no less worthy, Jeremy, for anything that went on around them. Nate Stacey and Kyle Marcelli had a very nice start to the season. Daytona was kind of okay. Sebring on the podium. Road America on the podium. VIR picked up some points. Road Atlanta first time around picked up some points. Then two straight victories, two consecutive victories at the Mid-Ohio event. Road Atlanta second time around. WeatherTech, okay. Sebring by then, as you said, it was all over. Another podium. The Aston Martin and Co did a cracking job, as did Canadian Kyle Marcelli and Nate Stacey. A good year, a championship year. Take nothing away from them.
Absolutely tremendous job they did all season long. Yeah, the worst result was a seventh at Road Atlanta. A couple of sixes, every other time, you know, in the top five. I mean, a remarkable season for that team. It was Nate Stacey who always took the qualifying duties in that car. He was bested only on the season average by Tyler McCorry in the Audi. Wow. For Carbon Racing. He was on the pole position four times, was Nate Stacey, same number of times actually as Tyler McCorry. Just a really, really good season. I mean, they took advantage of a very, very good car. Again, Core Motorsports, Dean Martin and Larry Rahagan, really, really good guys. Yes. Been around the sport a long, long time. You can say the same also for Kyle Marcelli. You know, he's been around a long, long time nowadays. So it was a really good combination all the way around. Hardly any mistakes. There were a couple of kind of minor miscues, which really didn't cost them anything. A very, very well-deserved championship for Nate Stacey, Kyle Marcelli, Aston Martin and Core Motorsports.
That makes me realise how long we've been doing this when Jeremy says Kyle Marcelli's been around for quite a while. I remember him dropping into the championship and doing some prototype challenge of seats, odd races here and there, a bit of a super sub, notably up at Canadian Tire Motorsport Park and other places. I mean, 10 years in the championship now, in the IMSA paddock now for Kyle Marcelli. But as Jeremy said, good year for those guys. Great win for Aston Martin as well. They were very pleased about that. Aston Martin Racing really do support their customers. Just gone through a bit of a change in how they do things in the US, and they win the championship as well with those two and Co.
Very much so. And when you think about Aston Martin Racing and how long they have been a part of this series and all of its various iterations, you've got to feel especially proud for them, because they've been represented in years past only by Automatic Racing. And Automatic has come in and gotten race wins, yes, but they've thrown away a lot of race wins too, with blown pit stops or bad strategy or whatever. And so for them to finally have a team that they come in and win the championship in such a dominant fashion, and the point spread at the end doesn't reflect what we actually saw out on track, but still, true, for Aston Martin, it is a very well-deserved manufacturer's championship.
Yeah, that's fair, Jeremy. 34 points between second and first, and another, 20-odd back to third. Actually, the racing on track, Shea's right, was, for the most part, probably a lot closer than that. I don't remember a particularly tedious 15 laps, never mind a whole race. I'll put my head up at the parapet now and say I like the long race, the long races that they do, the four-hour format, I think works. I think the teams like that as well. But there's nothing wrong with the standard races. We've had plenty of excitement, plenty of entertainment, and there's just enough strategy in that to actually make it, I would say, a proper endurance race. If not on time, certainly on the way you have to think about the race.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, yeah, nothing wrong at all with the IMSA Michelin Pilot Challenge. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. No fixing is required, John. I completely agree.
No fixing required, absolutely. Let's quickly take you back to TCR. Shea, do you have a driver or drivers of the year in TCR?
My driver of the year is somebody who I knew almost nothing about when the season began and know a lot about now. Ryan Norman really impressed me over the course of the year, not only in his driving on track, but his ability to answer the phone and give us a wonderful interview after he won a race. There's so much excitement that comes into this, particularly when you're a youngster. And when you're on the podium five times in 10 races, that says something about your ability, particularly in such a competitive class.
Jeremy, TCR, who stood out for you?
Yeah, I think Sherry makes a really, really good point there. I mean, you know, 1 year ago, if you'd said Ryan Norman was going to be racing in the IMSA Michelin Pilot Challenge, he'd have said, what? Mm. So, yeah, he adapted really well. Great attitude. Really good guy. No, for me, John Morley, I think, is probably the driver of the year.
Good call.
He did a really, really good job every time he got in the car. I can't think of anything even close to the hint of a mistake. But look, any of those top drivers did a really good job this year. It was a tremendous season in TCR. You know, a couple of races where the field was a bit smaller than we'd anticipated, but it was a good year all the way around, I think. And many drivers made their mark.
Yeah, the thing about John, which a lot of people forget about when you are the senior partner in a two-driver team, is you're not only having to look after your own driving, it is your job to mentor the other driver. And he's clearly done that very well with Gavin as well. I think that's a good call, Jeremy. Shea's already nominated Robbie Fawley. She got in early, very sneakily there. In fact, I'm hearing you've got a jump start penalty for being out of line at the flag for that. So you'll have to go back.
Formation.
Yeah, out of formation, I'm afraid. Jeremy, can you pick an outstanding driver from the GS GT4 field this year? There was plenty of them to choose from, I tell you.
Yeah, there certainly were. I think, yeah, Robbie's a really good call, actually. I must admit, Dylan Murray also, you know, he's massively impressive for a youngster, you know, still a teenager, for goodness sake.
I know, that's scary.
And, he was absolutely superb. But again, all the drivers, yeah, good call by Shea. Robbie really stepped up this season. This was his breakout year from my perspective. But it helps, of course, doing as much driving as he did. You know, not only doing both the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship and the Michelin Pilot Challenge, but as Shea was saying, you know, driving two cars in the Pilot Challenge all the way through the season as well. Not many drivers this year probably got more racing miles in than Robbie Fawley, and he took full advantage of it and deserving of all the plaudits that are coming his way.
Yeah, honourable mention from me goes to a trio of the gentlemen drivers. Jim Cox, you've mentioned. I'd add into that Alan Brynjolfsson and Bryce Ward as well among that. I saw real development from all of those drivers this year in what was, let's be honest, Jeremy, a very competitive field. Whenever you were out on the track, I mean, to have a quiet race where you were driving around on your own was almost unheard of this year, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was brilliant. You know, the average field through the whole year was almost 34.
Wow.
And you know, potentially it's looking. And again, you know, COVID definitely took away quite a number of cars this season. We could have had at least, I think, five or six more full-time cars in the championship this season. You know, I think next year, you know, there's been a raft of announcements already, I'd say it's already looking pretty darn good.
And Shea will have at least one more manufacturer than the eight we had this year, because Toyota, with the GR, the Gazoo Racing Supra, you spotted it in the paddock at the first Atlanta race and confirmed that that car's coming in. So even more variety for us to get excited about for 2021.
Yeah, there's only good news coming from GT4 and TCR. And if you need to look back on that and sort of bolster your confidence, look at the race that we had at Daytona this year with more than 50 cars in the field. Good. I think it won't be long before we get that once again.
Yeah, totally agree. Jeremy Shaw and Shea Adam were alongside me for this review of the IMSA Michelin Pilot Challenge, as they were for the whole of the season. I thoroughly enjoyed watching and talking about it, and clearly from the Twitter and other social media activity, you enjoyed being a part of it as well. Make sure you tune in for the 2021 season. We'll have every moment of every race live for you on IMSA Radio, and for the most part as well, you'll be able to watch and have our sound, so in sound and vision, for the season 2021. Have a great holiday period, and we'll see you at Daytona for the first round of the Michelin Pilot Challenge 2021.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.